The business side of aviation. It's not something we've touched on a whole lot. I don't know how far we'll go into it in the future. I'd like to talk about it some more, but it can get quite interesting. And I've had, you know, quite a few friends who've moved up from flying into administration. And Rick Zirkle, who we interviewed earlier, he was at that point, he was the director of ops of Linden Air Cargo. He's now the president. So I'll end up talking about the business side with him quite a bit. And my Uncle Mike, who I lived in there, he and my Aunt Joanna's house when I was learning how to fly, and he was involved in the business side of aviation, airport manager, and then sort of high-level consultant for quite a few years. So I've always heard about the business side and listened to it, but I've never really dug into it. And more recently, I've had quite a few friends up in Alaska get 135 certificates and kind of start their own companies, which is something I want to talk to them about. And this interview actually goes back a couple years to when I was flying in Nepal, which if you haven't figured out, that was one of my favorite flying jobs ever. Those guys were just awesome to work with. And I did, before I left Nepal, I sat down with Manoj Karki, and he was in charge of Goma Air. He'd helped start the whole airline. He was an accountant by trade, which a lot of pilots would say, you just don't want the bean counters in charge. But I would actually differ in that opinion. I think you might want the bean counters running your airline. Pilots don't always do the best job. Sometimes they do very well, but sometimes they're better off sticking to the flying. So we sat down with Manoj and had a good conversation about what it was like to start an airline in Nepal, which is a bit different than starting one in the U.S. And we're just posting this now because we weren't quite sure where we wanted to go with the, how much we wanted to delve into the business side of aviation at that point in the oddball pilot life. So we think now might be an appropriate time, and hopefully I'll follow up with some interviews with some of my friends who have started those 135 operations. And we'll sort of keep looking into what it takes to run an aviation business. And so I hope you enjoyed the interview. Manoj was, all those guys were just great. So yeah, it was good to sit down with them and talk about this. This is Aiden with Oddball Pilot, sitting down with Manoj Karki. He's the managing director of Goma Air, which is a newer airline here in Nepal. And I've been working with them the last couple months as they're starting up with the Cessna Caravans. And we're just going to talk to Manoj about how Goma Air got started, how he got involved with it, where they plan to go from here, and what they plan to do with their company. So Manoj, let's just start off sort of at the beginning, because you're not a pilot.
Right.
This is your first venture into aviation.
Exactly.
Okay, so your first business was, you were a businessman, ran an accounting firm.
Right. More than a businessman, I was a professional. I was involved with an accounting firm. I was more into accounts and financial consultancy rather than a business.
Okay. And how you got involved with Goma Air? How did you end up going from a good, stable type of business into aviation?
Okay. The thing is, a very good friend of mine, Manish Panther, Captain Manish Panther, we grew up together since our childhood. And in between, he chose aviation and I chose accounting. And later on, when he completed his pilot course and he came back to Nepal from the US, we used to talk a lot about how things goes around aviation industries. So he used to share it's all about pilots, how well they can fly the aircraft. It's that thing that either makes or breaks a company. So he used to tell me that. And through him, I came to know a couple of other pilots who are associated with our company right now. So what happened was during lunch break or maybe at weekend, when we used to share a couple of bottled beers, we used to sit around and talk about if it's possible to start a company of their own, not mine. I used to tell them you should be starting something on your own. So I used to tell them that, and they used to laugh about it, and I say no, it's a big investment, and maybe we are not much into managing the company, we are more into flying aircraft. But still I used to suggest them rather than flying for somebody else, you should fly for yourself.
But the hard work you're putting in, you could be making the money in your own company.
Right.
And to back up a little bit, you were mentioning that the pilots kind of make and break a company, mm-hmm. and you're referring to, it's how pilots are. They can decide
whether to take a flight, whether not to take a flight, what type of load to put on board. And different pilots might be more aggressive, a little less aggressive, and sometimes they're just not that interested in doing the flight.
Right, right. So in that group that I was talking about, like, there were different types of pilots. Like, some were like mellow, some were aggressive, and some were not so aggressive. And like, they used to discuss a lot about how they approach their flyings. And like, in a particular day, like when they used to go to the same airfields, somebody used to make it, somebody used to divert it, and like, they used to talk about like how much loss they have caused to the company or how much profit they had insured for the company.
Right. It sounds, I know I've talked about Alaska a lot with you guys, since that's where I really started my aviation career. And a lot of the flying out here is similar in many ways. In a more formal airline, often the pilot doesn't make those decisions made by a dispatcher. They're just legal limits. Mm-hmm. But here in Nepal, where it's more up to the pilot to decide how they're going to fly the plane and whether they're going to fly the plane.
To some extent, like, maybe it's true, but like, maybe the dispatcher will have a final say. Like, if you have been avoiding a flight for a couple of days, maybe that will add up to the pressure
that they
have not like performed to the expectation of the company, and they may end up like doing flights when they were not supposed to do.
Okay. Yeah.
So that was also another issue, like, which I used to discuss with them, is that like, if it's their own company, they should be knowing when to fly and when not to fly.
Right. Yeah.
Rather than the business driving them, like, okay, this is a group like who has paid us this much amount, and like, we need to make their flight because they have only limited stay in Nepal, and like, they have to be back by this date.
Right. So no longer safety wasn't the concern.
Right.
It was the pressure of making money.
Money. Right.
And we have to go now.
Maybe during those period, like, maybe they had to compromise with the safety.
Right. Yep. 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 And I've seen that happen too. That's real common. I talked to a friend of mine who runs a company in Alaska last summer, and there's always a conflict between usually like the chief pilot and the director of operations. The director of operations needs to make money.
Right.
The chief pilot wants to take care of his pilots and keep everything safe and legal.
Right.
And it's and working with your chief pilot and your director of operations out in Sirkeh was actually really good, and everyone I've seen out there is pretty concerned about safety. I would say AD is probably a little more interested in producing revenue, although everyone's interested in producing revenue because everybody owns a part of this company.
Right.
And at this point, nobody's interested in compromising safety.
Right, exactly. That's like during our like, initial talks, like we used to have, you know, in my accounting firm, like what I used to say is like it has to be safety first. That's the mission of our company, in fact, safety of our crew and the passengers alike.
Right, and the planes.
And the planes.
You know, from a financial standpoint, you hurt an airplane, it costs you hundreds of thousands of dollars. Yeah.
So it is safety first, and like what we have is like we managed to bring in two good engineers in our team.
Right.
So, and it's a clear instruction to them is like safety will not be compromised at any cost.
Okay, cool. So back to starting the company, you and Manish, your friend Manish, were sort of talking about this, and you did that for several years, kind of just
talking
back and forth.
Yeah, like we started this talk maybe way back in 2002.
Okay.
So it was way back, and like in between, like we used to lose track of, like, even we were talking about it, like, and every time like we meet, like, there was a plan. What happened to that?
Like, and you're like, Manish, you're still flying for the same company.
Right.
Still have the same complaints.
And like he used to say, like, though you are into this consultancy field, like you don't know nothing about what goes on into the aviation sector. So it's not as easy as you think to run an aviation company.
Right.
So but I say, like, we should give it a try, like, let's see like how it goes.
So how did you go from those initial conversations to actually getting the company started?
So once I come to know a few more pilots through Manish, like I should share say with them, like, okay, so you should be doing something on your own. And they used to laugh about it, like, we are very young and like we know nothing about the management, like, are we capable of doing it or not? But like deep down, like they also wanted to start something on their own.
Right, but maybe we're a little bit nervous about doing it.
Nervous about starting something new on their own. Like, and it has never been done in Nepal, like some professionals getting together and running a business.
Right.
So
that's what struck me as very unique here, is that you don't have just one or two investors.
Mm-hmm.
You have like eight.
Nine.
You've got quite a few. Mm-hmm. And for the all of you, mm-hmm. you were leaving good, secure jobs.
Right.
To really start something that you really you didn't know how it would go.
Right, exactly.
You still don't. I mean...
Yeah, like we're still learning. Like we're just taking like few baby steps right now.
Yeah.
So we don't know like exactly where it leads us to, but like the signs are good.
Right.
And like we are getting a little comfortable now, like having known the business a little bit. Though we are yet to know about so many things.
Yeah.
How it goes.
And so you had those conversations. I remember at over lunch we were talking, and you started bringing in more partners, and you were meeting in your office at the accounting firm.
Right. Back then, like we used to have only one. That's the place where I was working. So that was the meeting ground for all of them. So they used to come here, and like we used to have lots of coffees and teas, and we used to talk about so many things, and at times like we used to get distracted and talk about something else, and like I had to bring them back. Guys, we're here to talk about the aviation industry. That
focus, guys, focus.
Focus, right. So like we had like maybe 20-25 meetings. Initially like it was four of us: myself, Captain Ravindra Rokhaya, our operation director Ando Josepa, better known as Edie.
Yep.
Manish Panta, and like we four of us were like willing to start a company on our own, and we didn't know like whom else to like go for, and like we didn't want this thing to go out in open also. We wanted to like keep it as secret as possible before.
Right.
So
what was it, all these guys are working for other airlines?
Yeah, only back then only Edie was free. Like he had just completed his assignment in India and had come back home.
Right.
But like he was taking another assignment in Indonesia, and like he had some like 1.5 months break in between.
Hi, come on in.
And
good to see you.
It's in my internship also anymore. So
we'll see you in a minute.
This is the one like who's been providing us with the cargo. Nepal Food Corporation. Those bags we used to get.
Very important man.
Okay, so.
So you had for AD was sort of in between jobs.
He had like he had 1.5 months, and like back then like it was in 2010, and World Cup soccer was going on, so we had so many reasons to meet.
To watch soccer
and watch soccer, have beer, and talk about if we are going to start a company or not.
Sounds like you were plotting a revolution.
Right. So, in between, like, what we thought was we need to have a few more of the captains in our team, and we didn't know whom to talk. Nagendra, a good friend of mine, and a very good friend of Manish as well, he also was willing, but like, we never knew whether you was flying a twin otter and whether you'd be interested in joining a company that would be bringing in a single engine aircraft.
Okay.
So he was not around. He was in Hong Kong exactly then, and like when he came back, like we called him up and said like we have this plan, and like would you be interested in joining us? And he said, not only me, even my brother who is the captain, he's willing to join. And like, and he came by, and like we talked more about it, and like we still felt like if we can bring one more captain, then we will have enough captains on our team, so
right.
that like we can start operation of two aircrafts. So I knew Captain Sanjeev Archipand, but not that well back then. It was just hi and hello, like
right.
used to meet
you in passing.
Right. So Nagendra called him up and like said, okay, we are at Manoj's office, and we are discussing about like if we are to start a company on of our own or not. And he said, like, where exactly is that place? I'll be there in 5 minutes. So he was there in the 5 minutes.
So everybody was pretty, they were all looking for something else.
Right, maybe they were like not happy about how things were going in their companies.
Right.
That could be the reason, but I'm not sure exactly. But
that's normal with pilots.
Okay.
Pilots almost always grouch, complain about the company they're with.
Okay.
They don't, usually they don't quit, but okay. usually it's pretty good pay and pretty good,
right.
usually it's a pretty good job.
Right.
But pilots, they have a lot of time sitting in the seats, and there's a lot of, we need more time off, this and that.
Right. So we had everything going on, like, but still, like, we were lacking with the engineering part. So Captain Edie and all of them, in fact, knew two engineers of ours who we have in our team right now.
Okay.
So we invited them over, And even they were complaining about their companies. Not only pilots, it seems like engineers are also not satisfied with their companies.
And you pulled them in as partners as well?
Yeah, like even they were willing to like contribute something in the company. And like so we had a complete team. But once the team was done, like it was only our engineering director, like we knew more about how things goes while procuring aircraft.
Right.
But none of us had any experience on like how to procure an aircraft.
Well, it sounds like, from what you said earlier, that you were already interested in single engine planes.
Right.
The twin otters.
Like when four of us, like that's Edie and me, Manish and Ravindra, used to sit together, like what you knew is like, buying a multi-engine would be maybe not within our pockets, so, like it was way too expensive.
Right,
like, we could afford a like, single engine, like if some bank were willing to finance our project. We didn't have that enough money that we can buy it on our own.
Right. And some of this I'm pulling from talking to your pilots. Part of the problem there is you can't import an airplane into Nepal that's more than 50 years old.
20 years
old. 20 years old.
Right.
So you are there's a whole bunch of airplanes that you are blocked off from, single-engine planes that might have worked.
Right.
And older older twin otters.
Twin otters, right.
Yeah, so you had to get a new twin otter.
Either new twin otter, and like it was just in the market, and it was somewhere around 4 million plus.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It's a lot, and like so. And recently, what had happened was like Nepal had banned single engine in Nepal.
Oh, interesting.
So there was an incident with a Cessna Caravan, not the grand one, but the smaller one.
Right.
Back in 96 or 97, I forgot the exact date.
Okay.
So they had a the aircraft crashed and. Maybe there was one fatality as well.
Okay.
So, and somebody in the ministry thought like maybe single engines are too risky to fly in Nepal. And they banned single engine import in Nepal.
Even though that, the single engine may not have even been the cause of the accident.
Yes, they never got into the root cause of the accident.
Right.
So
I've seen that a lot, that agencies or someone jump to a conclusion and make an easy decision for them, like just ban all of this.
Right.
Without trying to find out really what happened.
So, just we were about to start our company, like it was like 6 or 7 months back, they had relaxed that thing and like they were willing to allow single engine to operate in Nepal.
Okay.
But not do the scheduled flight, only charter flights.
Okay, yep.
So we knew like, okay, single engine could be the market for us.
Yep, and you were looking at the Caravan quite a bit, and you were looking at the Kiwi plane a little bit too?
No, not exactly, because when we were thinking about starting our operation, like those Pacific stall was already imported into Nepal.
Okay, yeah.
And there was another Caravan that was also imported into Nepal, and like we compared the operation of those two.
Okay.
So what we thought is like Cessna Caravan is much better than Kiwi stall, and like it's being a new airplane, it was not tested well enough, so.
Right.
So, and like, what had happened was like there was an incident with that aircraft in Nepal already.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah.
The one fitting with it where the gear had issues.
Right, so we thought like maybe that is not meant for the small field airfields here in Nepal. So we thought, let's go for Grand Caravan.
Caravan. So once you decided you wanted a Caravan, what was the procedure to finding one?
Oh, the first thing we did was like we Google it.
Great, in your office.
Yeah, like, okay.
Yeah.
Let's Google it.
Like, absolutely.
Yeah, and, like there were lots of caravans on sale.
Yeah, yep, yep.
And I said, oh, yes, we can get one now. There are lots of caravans within that 20 years limit.
Yep, yep.
So what we did was like we made a sort of a ready-made email. And email to every thing that appeared in our Google, like everyone, like we emailed them. Yes, we are interested in aircraft. Like, how much is it?
Yeah, yeah.
What's the specification? What's this, that? And like, when we started, even that engineering team had not joined us, so we didn't know exactly what are the things that we should be asking for.
And did you have funding from the banks already, or
no,
this is just let's see what we can figure
out? Yeah, like because like to have funding, like we knew like how much fund we were gathering.
Right.
But we didn't know the exact cost of the aircraft.
Right.
So what is the deficit that we should be funding from the bank? We were yet to know. So.
And you didn't have the engineers yet to tell you about which planes to look for.
Right. And like being in the financial sector, we had good relationship with few banks, so we were pretty confident that like maybe they would fund our project.
Right.
If they see our the team that we have, they would finance the project, and it happened that way. Like within 15 days, they were they had agreed to fund our project.
Okay, yeah, but you've got a bunch of partners who are all successful, a mix of businessmen and pilots, which is a good mix. So your pilots are in charge of the business side, and all of you are a good risk for the bank.
Right.
Cool. So you sent out all your lists to the Google list.
Yeah, and like, and we did get lots of replies the next day.
Right.
And we were pretty excited. And I said, okay, it's not that hard that that we thought it would be. So, but like, in between, like, we tried to negotiate with so many people, but like, things didn't work out. Maybe we were not happy about the price they were quoting or the specification they had.
Right.
And what we had in mind. So, in between, what had happened was like, I'd spoken to my sister who lives in the States, and she had, and like, I shared her with this idea that we are starting an airlines company. She was laughing. And I said, what? Airlines company? Are you nuts? Like, yeah. You're doing good. You're doing good. You can stick to it.
You're good. You have a wife and kids. You
right.
need to be solid.
Right. And she said, like, no, we are. Like, we have decided that now.
Huh.
And she said, like, and I spoke to my brother-in-law. And I asked him, like, if he can help us out in finding some good companies who do have Cessna Carib. And like, so there's a company in Seattle called Kenmore. So maybe they have some, so you should try reaching them.
Yeah.
For the first time I heard the name Kenmore Air, because though they are a very good company and a well-reputed company in the States.
Yeah, they're not. They're a small airline in the Northwest.
Right.
Mainly in Seattle, flying so, float planes.
Right. So I Googled Kenmore. I came to know about the fact that they are more into seaplanes rather than in land planes.
Right.
But like they had listed two caravans in their website, and the name of the executive who was in charge of sales was also given. So I sent an email to him, and that's how we started.
You were saying that he was gone from the office for about a month. So
yeah,
like
gave 20, up. Yeah, 20 days or so. So like when I sent him a request saying like, if you can send me an offer price for the two Cessna caravans that you have listed in the, but he didn't reply. And like for 10 days I waited and waited, and he didn't reply, and I thought like maybe they are not interested.
Right.
And like again I tried my luck and said like, let's see, and again there was no reply from another week. So I was like busy trying to strike a deal in Europe back then.
Okay.
It was in Denmark. They had to Cessna, and like they were willing to sell us. Then I received an email from Rob and saying that he was away to Alaska for a holiday or something. So he was sorry that he couldn't respond on time. And like he sent me an offer price, but to our surprise, what we thought was a Cessna Grand Caravan was a Cargo Master. So we said, sorry, we were looking for Cessna Grand Caravan and what you have is a Cargo Master.
Right.
Though the other aircraft was a Cessna Grand Caravan, but it was pretty new and much more expensive than what we thought it would be.
Right.
So I said, sorry, like we were looking for two Cessna Grand Caravan, and like, and you have only one caravan, and that too a little expensive on an expensive side. And I said, I'm sorry, thanks for sorry for troubling you. And like, after a couple of days, I received an email from saying like, okay, here's an option I can give to you. And he said like, though these aircrafts are not listed in our website, so if we can strike a deal, like we are willing to sell both the aircrafts to you. That's how it started.
Right. That started a long time. You worked with Kenmore a lot then after that, not just buying the airplanes, but they did your pilot training.
Yes, like there were lots of like back and forth emails, and like because they didn't know who we were, and like we didn't even have a website. Like we did have a website, but like till today, like it's also under construction.
That's what I saw that when I heard about the planes too.
Right.
So, I Googled you.
Right.
And I was like, under But
so like we just like booked that domain name, but like we didn't have time to go through
build
the site. So
well, plus this is all new to you.
Yeah.
But your pilots have never done the business side. They're your
right.
partners who are pilots,
mm-hmm.
and you were a businessman, but not an aviation
so,
person.
Right.
So this is all new.
New territory for us, and like building a trust between those two for between Goma Air and Kendo, it took a lot of time.
Yeah.
Because they were trusting with their aircrafts.
Yeah.
And we were trusting with our funds.
Exactly.
So, and but like we had heard stories about like easings like would like swipe away your money. Like,
right.
So like we were like, are they what they say? Like, are they what they are?
Right.
So like we were not like pretty sure like initially. So.
And Kenmore is thinking the same thing. Because yeah. Never dealt with a Nepalese company. Or,
and then maybe they had some bad experience with some company in Thailand. That okay. was what Todd was sharing to me, like when I was in the States.
Right, so they're just a little leery of Asian. They're yeah, thinking, like, what?
And they were like kind of waiting and watch. And what happened was like when we negotiated a deal, what we did was we asked them to train our pilots and engineers as well.
Right.
So there were five pilots who were going to States and two engineers, and they were very forthcoming and they said, "Yes, we would help you out with this one." So we sent our pilots thinking that like those banking channels would be, we would manage to like work it as fast as possible, and I stepped back. And my whole team was in Seattle doing the training, and Kenmore was yet to receive a penny from our side.
Right. Well, none of that came about, because I just, where I started getting involved a little bit through, I think Alex started contacting mm-hmm. you, and so there was a lot of discussions. We were going to be delivering the airplanes, right. Things were getting delayed. And it wasn't your fault or Kenmore's fault. From what I understand, part of the problem was your banks won't put the money in escrow.
Right.
So they won't put it and give it to a third party
right.
who then wait until the airplanes are mm-hmm. delivered. And just the way the business works here. Mm-hmm. And Kenmore wasn't used to that.
Right.
But you didn't have any choice. That's how the banks
yes,
do it.
Because like being a third country, like our currency is not a convertible currency.
Right.
So getting dollars out of Nepal is a big issue here.
Oh, yep, yep.
They don't want well-earned dollars out of the country without being certain the fact that like, they are importing the aircrafts.
Right, and that's a lot of... I mean, caravans may not be super expensive by U.S. dollars, but right. Nepal, that's a lot of money. A
lot of money.
Yeah.
So we had an issue with that, and like... even like when we heard about escrow, like I knew what exactly escrow is, like because in finance, like we use that term very frequently.
Yeah.
But like to have a third company who would ensure that like aircrafts are delivered, and to Kenmore that like funds would be delivered.
Right. Yeah.
So I like that idea, and like, even I pursued it to my bank, like let's go with an escrow company.
Right.
But they found it hard to understand, like. Why would we give money to some third company while the aircraft would be coming from some other company?
Right, yes.
And yep. maybe we'd have a hard time explaining our central bank like how it works.
Right.
So they chose a more safer version for them, like that is letter of credit. Let's go through letter of credit.
Okay, yep. And Kenmore was happy with that, yeah.
Not in the beginning.
Okay, took some talking.
Yeah, not in the beginning. And like, not in the beginning, and they were... It's really hard for the escrow company, like, but what I had to convince them is that like it's as safer as an escrow company. Maybe it will take a little longer,
right?
But like your safety is ensured that like funds would be received,
right?
So maybe they spoke to their banks in States, and like in, once they even those banks explained them like how ELC works. So maybe they were confident enough, like okay, let's go ahead with this one.
Right, I know Kenmore's. Very conservative, very cautious, but very stable, and very honest.
Right, and that's so, what we came to know about.
So they were going kind of very slowly.
Right.
Like, okay, we'll do this, but we want to make sure it's going to be okay. We don't want to take any huge risks.
Right.
But once they made an agreement with you, they didn't want to back out either. They
right.
wanted to,
they wanted to help us out with this. And like, they were pretty excited to know that like we are starting with the two aircrafts that we would be purchasing from Kenmore.
Yes, definitely.
That excited them as well.
Yeah.
And like the support that we received afterwards from Kenmore was really appreciated.
Right, maintenance and parts.
Right.
You're going to funnel a lot of stuff through Kenmore.
Right.
And you're going to keep working with Rob, who's
yeah,
their
yeah.
maintenance.
Yeah. And he was like, he came here all the way to Nepal on his own cost, like to see like how we operate and like if there's another way that where he can help us out. So like We have a very good relationship, and we'll continue the same good relationship with him.
Yeah, I think Rob's comment after he landed in Rara, then he had to drive to Napalgans.
Mm-hmm.
The driving here can be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody asked him, how was that drive from Phuket to Napalgans? Mm-hmm. And he said, I just landed in Rara. Nothing's scary anymore. But I know Ramesh has talked to Rob some more as well, so it seems like you are developing a good relationship.
Right, we are. We'll continue to explore other areas where we can help each other. So.
Cool.
So as to support both of us.
What other challenges did you have getting this airline started, getting the AOC, getting all the paperwork together to get an airline going? It was new to you.
Right.
And really new to you, because you hadn't been dealt with the Civil Aviation Authority before.
Right.
The pilots at least knew how difficult that can be.
The first thing that struck me was the amount of paperwork we had to do. I never knew that was so much paperwork. So,
the waiting periods.
Right. And we wanted things done as quickly as possible because our captains were also thinking that they should resign from the company. They were working as early as possible.
Right.
So they want something concrete to happen before they could submit their resignation.
Yeah.
And because of some business issue, they didn't want their name to come out as well. So.
Right, because they were flying from another airline and start a different one.
Right.
And they probably just didn't feel really good about flying one place where they're first. Yeah.
So while applying for AOCs, and what we had to do is we had to come up with some means who is your chief pilot, and to convince those authorities that we'd be hiring chief pilots afterwards. It was a difficult task in itself.
Right. They wanted a list of who your managers, your company officers are going to be. And you kind of knew who it was going to be by then.
But we were not in a position to share with them.
Right, because they're working for other people.
Right.
And they aren't ready to quit those jobs until they know this company's going to start.
Up and running.
Yep.
So that was a difficult part to convince. And we managed to convince them. Maybe within a month we had an AOC.
Okay.
It was not that, we didn't have to wait for that long.
Right.
We managed to get an AOC. So in between, there was some government change in Nepal, which delayed our project further. The thing was that it is the minister who has to sign the license.
Right.
On the basis of license only, we can have our AOC.
Okay.
So the minister who was on the chair, the prime minister had already resigned, and they were only a caretaker government.
Okay, so you've got a problem just that's big governmental problems that are beyond your airline.
Right.
That are slowing your airline down.
And there was this minister who was willing to help us out. But in a week's time, there was two elections in the parliament to elect a new prime minister. Every time we used to cross our fingers and say, no prime minister this time, we want this caretaker government to last until we have our license. So we had some problems in between because we could not come out with all those names. It was only me who was in open.
Okay, yeah.
So and those civil aviation guys who know most of the pilots and everything.
And they're looking at you and saying, who are you?
Who are you?
Yeah.
Are you sure you want to run an aviation business? And what made you to think you can even run an airline business?
You don't know anything about airlines.
Yeah. And I used to say jokingly, if I'm willing to invest this much money, what do you think? I don't have pilots with me. I do have pilots, but I don't want to
release who they are.
Who they are. You will come to know later on.
So it seems to have gone pretty. That was about 7 months ago.
Right. It was
You went. You had 10 years of talking, and then 7 months of work. Get this going.
Right. We had limited time, but we managed to do it
pretty
quickly. In comparison to international standard, to start an airlines company within 7 months and to be up and running.
It's really good.
Really good.
One thing I've been impressed with in Phuket is how busy your planes are immediately. From the day we showed up, we had full loads and we were flying the maximum amount we could fly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in Western Nepal. A lot of airlines stay with Eastern Nepal where there's more tourism. What was the business decision, and I'm assuming it's a business decision, to base your planes in Western Nepal where there's traditionally less tourism dollars, which is a big part of business?
Yeah, you're right. You may have little tourists in the Western sector, but the things why we decided to go to the western part of Nepal is like, even because of weather or some other condition, if one airport is closed, like we are at least 4 to 5 other airports where we can fly to.
Okay.
And eastern side is only 2 or 3.
Okay.
And basically it's Lukla.
Lukla, for the tourists.
Where the charm is.
Yeah.
And like because of the weather, that airport keeps on being closed time and again. Like if Lukla is closed, our aircrafts are on the ground.
And there are a lot of airlines flying to Lukla, Lukla too.
There's a heavy competition as well. But like for the other airlines with the multi-engine, like they could fly to some other airfields, but not us.
Ah, okay. But you're limited to the charter only, to AVFR.
Right. And like if Lukla is closed, that means our aircrafts are on the ground.
Whereas in Sirkat, Dopa's closed, so you go to Rara.
Right.
Rara's closed, you go to Bushdar. So, Bajura.
Bajura.
Bajura. Right. I'm still working on it. They're also, I know AD and Rokaya have talked a lot, and Sanjeev, about how a lot of the companies that base in the western side pull their planes out in the summer during the tourist season.
Right.
And that there was a need for an airline in Sirkat that's going to provide year-round service.
Right.
To help the locals out as much as making a profit.
Right, exactly. Like, what we thought was like, we are not only here to make profits, like we need to provide service to those locals because there are no airlines who operate around the year. So
right.
Maybe during spring and during autumn, what happens is like most of these airlines companies, they train to pull those aircrafts out of Western Nepal to and based in Kathmandu to cater the needs of tourists coming to Everest region.
Right.
So, and that is particularly the season like where most people do travel in western part as well.
Okay.
So there was a big vacuum, like, though there were two companies who were trying to operate, but like they were not able to cater the demands. The
right.
demand was way too high than whatever service they were providing.
Okay, and we see that now, that when I first started flying there, it was mainly freight, but now you're starting to see some of the people from the villages as mm-hmm. the weather warms up,
mm-hmm.
they're flying back out
right.
of their villages.
Right.
And so there is a pretty steady demand, it seems
right.
like.
In winter season, they tend to come down to lower altitude.
Yep.
So as the season warms up, there's a demand for like going back up. And like
okay.
even like tourists are like, we are opening western part of Nepal as well for the tourists.
Yep.
And though we don't have that much of infrastructure, but like we are seeing an increased number of tourists who wants to go to the western side of
and
Nepal.
And the only practical way of getting to these villages, which are, a lot of these villages are located pretty far into the Himalayas, so they're for tourists, they're great to go and they do hiking and trekking. And,
right.
Some of the lakes are real popular, but you can't get there by road.
No.
So it's the only way it is by
by air.
So you're thinking you can get out, you base out there where the bigger companies aren't providing reliable service.
Right.
And you can provide year-round reliable transportation.
Transportation, right. Exactly.
For locals and tourists.
Tourists alike and like...
Freight.
Because of lack of road transportation, like transporting food to those villages like is an issue.
Right.
With
yep.
our government, all it has been the keys. And even UN has... World Food Program, like who transports food grains to those villages.
Right. Yep.
So we knew that there was a market, like because and they were using expensive MI6 helicopter to transport all those grains.
Right. Yeah.
So we thought like maybe if we walk in, like maybe we can transport those food items at a lesser cost.
When you got that contract just this month, right?
Or, right.
I mean now I guess it's the first, but. In March, you got a World Food Program
yes.
contract.
Right, and we'll be starting transporting food items from next week.
Okay, so that's a big help for the company.
Yes,
yeah.
We know it would happen, but like unless it happened, like we were kind of
right. More like you had a good idea and you were hoping it would happen, but
yeah.
you never know until the contract.
Yeah, like when the contract for this year was open, we were yet to have our aircraft in Nepal. So
right.
I was in States, like when they had called for a tender. So we had to convince them, like we are bringing 2 aircraft, believe
yes,
us.
They're on their way.
They're on the way, believe us. Like,
yeah. And they waited.
They waited and they believed us. And like, we
cool.
disappoint them.
Yeah. How are your relationships with the other airlines out there? Pretty good? Or
We're trying to build up a good relationship, but like in the case of business, like when there's a new competition, like we call that trade barrier, they wanted to create a barrier so that no new entrant will not enter into the market.
Right, can't come in.
So, yeah, so they can't come in. Like so we had to face that problem as well. Like so, it was a very stiff resistance from some other airlines. Like they didn't want us to be there. So still, we are trying to negotiate like whatever barriers they have created.
Right.
So we have managed to like break many of those, but like still like some we are taking care of. Right.
I know on the practical side of that, that's all like upper management stuff, I think.
Right.
If the pilots flying out, all the pilots are talking to each other.
Like, yeah, like they have a very good relationship with each other because being a small country and like around 200-300 pilots, and most of our pilots are senior pilots.
Right.
So all the other companies' pilots do know them personally.
Right, but all your pilots have spent years out at Sirkat flying.
Yeah, like most of them have more than 10 years.
Yeah, I saw that with like some of them, like AD hadn't flown in that area for a couple of years. He'd been in India flying the ADRs. But when you land somewhere, people would come up and they'd be like, oh, they'd be just happy to see
you. Yeah, they would recognize him. Like, yes.
Yeah.
That was the issue. And like maybe other pilots are also like interested in the fact that like yes, we can start something on our own. Like if they could do it, like we can also do it. That's why like they are watching us very carefully.
Right. Yeah.
Where will we go?
Well, you've got a very good atmosphere among the pilots in Sirkat and the engineers, the whole crew. And you know, Daniel and I would stay in our rooms more because we're both kind of quiet. But your guys were always out there playing cricket and soccer and badminton.
Right.
But you were out there, you were in your soccer outfit playing football. Football.
Oh, the thing is, like, if we take average age of our team, it's below 40.
Yeah.
36, 37.
Yeah.
That's the average team.
Fairly narrow.
So, like, we're all fun-loving guys, and, like, once the last flight is done, like, we are all equals and like
time to play.
Let's slog it out in the soccer field.
yeah, you're right. You're all equal. There's no like this is the chief pilot, you're the general manager.
Right.
Like we're all
friends now.
Yeah, yeah, that's excellent.
Right.
In this first month, I know there have been some issues. I mean, strikes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are those problems that you would expect to happen where we couldn't fly for 4 days because the villagers were on strike? Or those unexpected problems, those normal problems in Nepal?
It's a normal thing in Nepal, and like we knew like we would be facing that problem over and over again, and like this should not be the only first time. Like we would be facing lots of these problems in years to come as well.
So just weather it?
This time around, it was more serious than what we had thought initially. It would last only for a day or two.
Right, yeah.
But the government had to intervene, and like, for 4 days, we had no flights.
Right. And in Jumla, we hadn't flown for a week before that.
Right. And the issue which led to this strike was that government has increased the airfare to those remote areas recently. That was before we started our operation.
Right, yep.
And they were complaining about the increases way too high.
Right, well, and if I'm right, that was based on the fuel tax that got added. And then the airlines increased their prices so they could pay the fuel tax.
Right, because when you were there in Sirkat, government has recently increased the fuel price by 12.5%. That was a huge increase.
Yep.
But like we were made to fly, take back that whatever increase was made. Right now we are using rates that was fixed some 4 years back.
Okay, but I knew the price hadn't changed for years. And then it went up.
It went up, but like they complained about it, and like again, government had no other option but to bring it down.
Right. Yeah.
But we are suffering because of it. But like government has ensured us that like they will find a way out.
Okay.
Maybe by way of subsidy, or maybe by way of reducing year fuel price for that reason. Like maybe in a couple of weeks' time, like they will come out with some concrete plans so that we may not have that problems again.
Well, in Kabul, like I always compare things to Alaska, where airfare is also an essential part of transportation.
Right.
And there are subsidies for airlines that provide transport where air is the only means of transportation.
Right.
Either through the mail service in Alaska, sometimes it's even just a direct payment to an airline. Like they say, we understand you're going to operate at a loss, so we'll make up the loss.
Right.
But here there's nothing like that. So the airline has to produce the money on its own.
Right.
And I know what your airfares are from when we collect money. They're comparable to a fare in Alaska, and your operating costs are comparable too, mm-hmm. and you're not subsidized.
Right, that's the problem. Like, what they see is what they are paying, and like they never understand the fact like we have so many expenses to take care of.
Yeah, got a lot of expenses. Fuel is huge.
Like, most of those people would not understand the technical part of it. Like, what is the cost of maintenance?
Right.
What is the pay scale of our pilots? And like, because of all those issues, like we are operating at a higher cost.
Yeah.
And at times, like when we do those passenger flights with such a less airfare, like we are not able to like even recover what's our operating cost.
Right. The freight is key to that.
Yes.
The freight is pays a little bit more.
Yes, that's how we make it. Like if we are able to like freight goods out of Surkhet or Nepal,
right.
Like, then we can make some money, and like we are subsidizing passenger flights on our own.
On your own,
right?
The freight flights.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So okay. Have you come across any, from your experience in business, starting an airline, besides the paperwork, are there any other challenges that you've seen that you didn't see in the business world? Is it a lot different from running a business, or is it somewhat the same? But
it's somewhat the same, but because of the technical issues, like because you have to rely so much on techniques.
Right.
Technical issues, like because it's not only the business decision that you can implement here.
Right, you need to keep the planes going.
Right.
You need to train the pilots.
Right. And like all the business are directly linked with how good technical team you have.
Right, yep.
Yeah.
And as we were saying earlier, how interested that technical team is in...
In the operation.
In the operation, yeah,
right.
That's a good way to put it.
Right.
And if they're not that interested, it's easy
then
for
no
a company
matter
to lose a lot of money.
Whether you are a Harvard graduate or someone, like, you will never be in a position to run a company.
Okay.
It's really difficult. Because I'd spoken to a very... what is this supposed to be? Director or something of a very big business house in Nepal.
Okay.
Who used to run an airlines company. And they are doing really good in business in Nepal.
Right.
But that's only one venture where they failed miserably. And what he suggested to me was that, like, beware.
Good luck.
Beware, because, like, it's a technical issue, and, like, the business input could be lesser in comparison to what input you should be getting from your technical team.
Right. Yeah, that you see that in the U.S. a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see big airlines that have to struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And then some do very well, so the managing of the airline is very important.
Right.
And keeping everyone happy. Seemed to me this first month has gone pretty well, with everything running. I know that's not very much time to go by, but what are your hopes for the company, and where do you see it a year from now?
A year from now, like what our plans are, like let's see how it goes during the months of Manchun, like that's 3 months.
Okay.
June, July, August. How does it affect our normal operations?
It's during those months you have worse weather, and you'll probably get fewer flights and produce less revenue.
Yes, exactly. That's the keys. Because in Nepal, it's generally 6 months like where we can fly without thinking about weather that
right.
much.
Yeah.
For the remaining six, like during monsoon, like it's because of rain and issues like that. In winter, it's fog because of less visibility. Like you may not be able to operate the number of flights that you'll be doing during summertime.
Right.
So let's see how it goes during the monsoon. Monsoon are really bad, like in comparison to winter time. So what we're planning is that in a year's time, like considering the amount of business that we are getting, like we should be in a comfortable position to add one more Grand Caravan. Like we didn't want to like go into some other aircraft right away.
Right.
So
yep.
Like maybe we would be adding one more Grand Caravan within 3-4 months.
Just stick with the plane, you know.
Right.
And I know all the pilots fantasize about Twin Otters, but they're so expensive. They're a ways down the road.
Thank God, like our government has a policy that we cannot import something that is 20 years old.
Yeah.
So I can always convince them, sorry, the other new Twin Otters are way too expensive. Old Twin Otters we cannot bring into Nepal.
Well, I was telling them that the single otter with the turbine would be a great plane for out there,
right.
too, but they're made in the 50s.
Right. So it's way out of mission.
Yeah, they have some other problems, or not problems, but issues as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as as all your pilots know, I'm a fan of the Twin Otter, a fan of the Caravan. I think it's great.
Right.
This is definitely stretching it. You know, this is kind of the limit of what it can do, but it can definitely do it. It's been doing it well. So it seems like that was a pretty good decision.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Any doubts about quitting your old business and starting this one yet?
No.
Still
I'm happy about that, that we did start this one.
And you have a nice office.
Thank you. So, people like though like our captains were busy flying pilots throughout their career, like they are doing things like they never knew like they should be doing, like taking care of administration.
Oh yeah.
How to like refurbish an office.
Your chief pilot had his day off, his required day off,
uh-huh.
And I got back to the house. I was like, oh, how was your day off? He's like, oh, day off. It's like I was setting up there, getting another crew house going. He's like, oh, I was talking about telephones and carpet, not carpet. Like, I was trying to get the house going, and I was working way harder than I do when I fly.
Right.
Like, I want to go back on duty.
That's one area that, like, surprises me as well, like, how they are involved with this company, like, not only flying, like,
yeah.
To get this company up and running, the input that I've been receiving from them in other parts also, like, it's really, really, really impressive.
Well, I know some of them come here on days off, and they've done a lot of work in Kathmandu when they're on days off.
Right, they're taking care of paperwork.
Yeah, that's unusual for, I mean, not unusual, but, you know, pilots, they like to do their work, and they like their time off.
Yes, yeah. Like, generally, like, once, like, they have completed their flights, they're at least bothered about, like, what goes around in the company.
So everyone's pretty committed to making this company
right.
work.
They are.
But they're all, it's one of the most cheerful bunch of guys I've worked with out there.
They're enjoying what they are doing. That's the key.
They're doing it for themselves.
They're doing it for themselves. I mean, like, there are so many things to prove to so many people out here in Nepal. That's why, like, they are working so hard. Like.
But it's hard to make something when you're working hard to make someone else rich.
Right.
It's a lot better if you're working hard to make yourself, maybe not rich, but to make a living for yourself.
Right. So that's the issue here. Like, and like, I think like deep down, like they feel that like we need to prove ourselves. Like, we left a company, and like we need to prove them that like we can operate a company on our own.
Well, I know a lot of them were having opportunities to go fly for, you know, big airlines.
Mm-hmm.
In Indonesia or in India, flying either ATRs or moving into jets.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of pilots, that's where you're supposed to end up.
Mm-hmm.
And the pay goes up, the time off gets better.
Right.
But a lot of them didn't want to come back here and do their own thing. And they want to go back to Western Nepal. I think they're all happy. It seems like everybody's
happy about it.
Yeah, they like being at the flying is more interesting than flying a jet from point to point.
Yeah.
With the autopilot on.
That was the first thing that came to my mind, like when we were thinking about starting a company, like whether they would be stable enough, or like what if like opportunity comes, like whether they would be in a position to say, well, I have this opening, I may be going in a couple of months. So, but
yeah, they all have family. Almost everyone except one pilot or one of the partners they have wives and children. And
right. That's one issue, like maybe a couple of them were in India and they were married then, their kids were in Kathmandu and they had a hard time like managing those issues. Like, they know like though the pay would be high, but the family values also counts at least for the culture that we are in.
Right. Be able to be home and spend time with your family is important.
Right. That's really important for us.
Well, and you see that the guys are spending a lot of time in Sirkat now too, and I know there's going to be a rotation set up as soon as everybody's trained.
Right.
And everybody's been willing to put the time in now, but
when
people get to come home and see their families, you can see their
pretty 1 hour flight.
Yeah. So, yeah, so close.
And like even the family feels like that they are within Nepal, they're not abroad.
Yeah, and they can talk on the phone.
Right.
And they can get home and see their family, even if it's just for 2 or 3 days, then go back for a little bit.
Right.
Cool. Excellent. Well. Anything else you'd like to add, or any other thoughts you have?
Okay, definitely. I would like to add. Like, I still remember the first time I met you in Seattle. Okay, it was raining. It usually rains in Seattle. I guess.
Always, yes. Always. 9 months a year.
So, and like, I met you through Alex. Like, and Alex also, like, it was Rob, like, who arranged, like, who brought Alex into, who convinced him, like, so that he was willing to ferry out
Right, yep.
Their types, and so we were looking for some instructor pilots who could help us out for our initial operations.
Yeah, yeah.
I still remember you, and like back then, like what we thought, like me, I was interested in you, like that you should be coming to Nepal, and like I was hoping that it would work out.
Yeah. But
some, deep down, I used to feel like maybe it would not work out. I don't know why, but that was my initial. Okay, he's the guy for us, but like, I don't know whether it would work out or not.
Well, I'm often like, not, I'm yeah, not the thing was
like maybe like after 20 or 25 days after before you were leaving Bangalore, like we were not sure like whether it would work out or not. But it did work out, and like we would like really thank you and Alex like, for the help that you have put forward in establishing this company.
Cool, it's been great.
Not only me, like even all my crews, like they really appreciate like what you have done, and like western part of Nepal, most of the people may not be knowing it's a weird like for Westerner, it may be like some 100 or 200 years back in time.
I like it. I was emailing a friend of mine who have the website with Oswald Pilot, and this is the type of flying I like the most. Mm-hmm. It's flying to small villages. Mm-hmm. It's like Alaska. Mm-hmm. And he knew right off the bat that it's one of the jobs I haven't liked so much. And like a week into it, he's like, it sounds like you found a place you like again.
Right.
Like, yeah, this is cool.
So like, and we were yet to establish a good crew camp. Like when you arrived in Sri Lanka,
it was fine. The hotel was bad. The crew camp was fine.
So like we had some like hard times, and like we were not bothered about our own crew, but like we had brought two crews from the U.S., and like within 2 days, they are really in a world that's way apart from where they live.
Well,
and like the complaints, no complaints whatsoever for 1.5 months. And like we thought like we were really blessed. And like this will definitely work for us now.
Well, like I was saying, probably why you were worried at the beginning is that I'm not always the most professional.
Right.
And I don't have short hair and I don't shave very often. But at least I'm used to living in tents and rough areas.
Right.
And your crew house is a lot of fun now.
It's getting safe now. And like it's habitable now, right now. But like when you walk in, I was in Kathmandu and I received a call immediately. We are at crew camp and there's no door, there's no windows, and the floors are like barren and there's no place to sleep. What do we do? I said, like, find a hotel. They said, hotel? What's that?
There's no hotel here.
So thank you for all the support that you lent to our team.
Yeah, thanks for having me come over.
We'd love to have you again here in Nepal.
Cool. I've talked to the folks about it, and we will see what happens and what you get going.
We'll be in touch, and like, let's see how it goes.
Absolutely.
From here.
That sounds good, and I need to get a CD and download all those pictures for you.
Okay, thank you.
Cool, all right. Aidan and Manoj, Broadball Pilot, we're signing off.
We hope you liked this interview. If you found it useful, visit oddballpilot.com for more stuff like it.